And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show, coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas, gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is March the 13th, 72nd day of the year. Only 293 days remain till the year's over with. Holidays and observances. National No Smoking Day in the UK. It's Ken Day, Smart and Sexy Day, National Canine Veterans Day, National Good Samaritan Day, National Jewelry Day, National Jewel Day, National Open an Umbrella Indoors Day, National Registered Dietitian Nutritionist Day, National Coconut Tort Day, National Earmuff Day, National Science and Engineering Week, World Glaucoma Week, Brain Awareness Week, Universal Women's Week, Ramadan, Pulmonary Rehabilitation Week. It is the Great Daffodil Appeal Month, National Reading Month, Veggie Month, National Sauce Month, National Peanut Month, National Colon Cancer Awareness Month, Epilepsy Awareness Month, Developmental Disability Awareness Month, Brain Tumor Awareness Month, National Women's History Month, National Nutrition Month, National Hemophilia Awareness Month, National Social Work Month, National Small Press Month, Multiple Sclerosis Awareness Month, National Caffeine Awareness Month, National Umbrella Month, National Kidney Month, National Craft Month, International Ideas Month, National Credit Education Month, National Cheerleader Safety Month, Endometriosis Awareness Month, Rising Star Month, National Music in Our Schools Month, Irish American History Month, and National Athletic Training Month. Now, all that having been said, in 624, the Battle of Badr, the first major battle between the Muslims and the Quraysh. 1567, the Battle of Austerlitz, traditionally regarded as the start of the 80 Years' War. 1591, at the Battle of Tonbi in Mali, Moroccan forces of the Saadi dynasty, led by Djoudar Pasha, defeat the Songhai Empire, despite being outnumbered at least 5-1. 1639, Harvard College is named after clergyman John Harvard, and if he could see what it has become. 1697, Nojpeten, the capital of the last independent Maya kingdom, falls to Spanish conquistadors. Final step in the Spanish conquest of Guatemala. 1741, the Battle of Cartagena de Indias, part of the War of Jenkins' Air, begins. 1781, William Herschel discovers Uranus. 1809, Gustav IV Adolf of Sweden is deposed in the coup of 1809. 1811, a French and Italian fleet is defeated by a British squadron off the island of Vis in the Adriatic during the Napoleonic Wars. 1826, Pope Leo XII publishes the Apostolic Constitution, Quadriga Variora, in which he renewed the prohibition on Catholics joining Freemasonry. 1845, Felix Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto receives its premier performance in Leipzig with Ferdinand David as soloist. 1848, the German Revolutions of 1848 and 49 began in Vienna. 1862, the Act prohibiting the return of slaves is passed by the U.S. Congress, effectively annulling the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 and setting the stage for the Emancipation Proclamation. 1884, the Siege of Khartoum begins. It lasts till January 26, 1885. 1888, the eruption of Reeder Island triggers tsunamis that kill up to 3,000 people on nearby islands. 1900, the British forces occupy Bloemfontein, Orange Free State, during the Second Boer War. 1920, the Kapuche briefly ousts the Weimar Republic government from Berlin. 1930, the news of the discovery of Pluto was announced by Lowell Observatory. 1940, the Winter War between Finland and the Soviet Union officially ends after the signing of the Moscow Peace Treaty. 1943, the Holocaust, German forces liquidate the Jewish ghetto in Krakow. in Krakow, rather. 1954, the Battle of Dien Bien Phu begins with an artillery barrage by Viet Minh forces under Vo Nguyen Giap. Viet Minh victory led to the end of the First Indochina War and French withdrawal from Vietnam. Interestingly enough, the French actually had a foreign legion. And within that foreign legion were a lot of former Nazis. And they were exterminating the Viet Minh until Ho Chi Minh went to the national press and revealed the French were using Nazis. So the French stopped that program. And you see what happened. 1957, Cuban student revolutionaries stormed the presidential palace in Havana in a failed attempt to kill President Fulgencio Batista. 1969, Apollo 9 returned safely to Earth after testing the lunar module. 1974, Sierra Pacific Airlines Flight 802 crashes into the White Mountains near Bishop, California. Killed 36 people. 1979, the New Jewel Movement, headed by Maurice Bishop, ousted the Prime Minister of Grenada, Eric Gehry, in a coup d'etat. 1988, the Sikon Tunnel, the longest tunnel in the world with an undersea segment, opens between Aomori and Hakodate, Japan. 1992, the 6.6 Rzinkan earthquake strikes eastern Turkey with a maximum Mercalli intensity of 8, which is considered severe. 1993, the 1993 storm of the century affects the eastern U.S., dropping feet of snow in many areas. 1996, the Dunblane massacre leads to the death of 16 primary school children and one teacher in Dunblane, Scotland. For those who are not familiar with the Dunblane massacre, it took place in Dunblane Primary School in Dunblane near Stirling, Scotland. 43-year-old Thomas Hamilton shot 16 pupils, one teacher, and injured 15 others before killing himself. It's the deadliest mass shooting in British history. Following the killings, public debate centered on gun control laws, including public petitions for ban on private ownership of handguns and an official inquiry which produced the 1996 Cullen Report. See, that's the problem. Knee-jerk reaction. Ban the guns. But that lets those who are violent oriented, I guess you could say, to have unrestricted access to killing whoever they want if nobody else has guns. It's just crazy. The gun control debate has been crazy to begin. People who are coming up with these ideas know nothing about guns. If somebody hit a bunch of people with their car and killed them, you don't see marching in the street demanding a ban of cars. Well, it should be treated the same way as gun deaths, if you're going to be fair. 1997, the Missionaries of Charity chose Sister Nirmala to succeed Mother Teresa as their leader. 2003, an article in Nature identifies the Campate del Diavolo as 350,000-year-old hominid footprints. 2012, the Sierra coach crash kills 28 people, including 22 children. 2013, the 2013 Papal Conclave elects Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio, taking the name Pope Francis as the 266th Pope of the Catholic Church. 2016, the Ankara bombing kills at least 37 people. Also in 2016, three gunmen attacked two hotels in the Ivory Coast town of Grand Bassam, killing at least 19. 2020, President Donald Trump declares the COVID-19 pandemic to be a national emergency in the U.S. Also in 2020, Breonna Taylor is killed by police officers who were forcibly entering her home in Louisville, Kentucky. Her death sparked extreme protests against racism and police brutality. That's another issue I have trouble with. Whenever one of the people involved on the losing side is a minority, it's immediately racism. The facts are never looked at, which is a sad thing. And that causes a lot of injustice. Okay, let's see. There have been so many yeah, that's interesting. My system is having difficulties. Let's see what else. Well, we have had so many topics that we've discussed on this show. We have done a lot of Hollywood murders and unexplained deaths. You know, March is an interesting month. The Ides of March, for example, the 74th day of the Roman calendar, corresponds to March 15th. Marked by several religious observances, it was a deadline for settling debts in Rome. In 44 BC, of course, it became notorious as the date of the assassination of Julius Caesar. That made the Ides of March a turning point in Roman history. Now, it's interesting when you take into consideration the fact that among the assassins were some of his closest friends, which of course raises all kinds of questions. Now, what we're going to talk about today, we've talked about unsolved mysteries, we've talked about the paranormal. We're going to talk about witches today. You know, witches have been with us throughout history. They performed rituals, venerated nature and the spirits, and sought protection from danger and disease for millennia. Variations of the spiritual practices and personalities associated with witchcraft have existed for most of recorded history. Throughout the ages, the public's perception of witches has fluctuated, sometimes viewing them as wise and revered healers, and other times the folks to be feared and persecuted because of their assumed association with malevolence and satanic practices. While the witch trials of the past were marked by fear and persecution, contemporary views of witchcraft have changed, and many understanding it to be a spiritual practice. According to Alex Marr, author of Witches of America, in an interview with Cosmopolitan magazine, there are about 1 million Americans who practice witchcraft, and they draw from a combination of pre-Christian European religions and Western occult and Masonic societies. And as it evolves, witchcraft continues to embrace and adapt a wide range of cultural and religious influences and rituals. Today, many of the influential witches of myth and folklore have found new relevance in the modern world. One of the examples is Hecate, an ancient Greek goddess, dates back to the 5th century BC. Associated with death, the underworld, the moon, dreams, and creatures of darkness. Sorceresses ask for her help with spells by making offerings during a new moon. And many modern-day Wiccans and practitioners of neo-paganism refer to her as a dark goddess, because her link to darkness, death, and the night.
You know, Netflix subscribers recognize the name as well, and the chilling adventures of Sabrina, the title character and TV witch Sabrina Spellman, and her aunts belong to a coven celebrating the goddess Hecate, although for their purposes, they spell the name a little differently. Though the powerful female sorcerer appears in the Old Testament's Book of Samuel, which was probably written between 931 and 721 B.C., this individual is known as the Witch of Endor, had the ability to communicate with the dead using a talisman and predict future events. Today, her reference spanned the serious to the silly. Celebrated among modern-day witches, venerated by other religion practitioners and warnings against the occult, and even made an appearance on a popular TV show. The mother of Samantha Stevens, the witch on Bewitched, was named Endora, which was a nod to the Witch of Endor. In the 8th century B.C., Homer wrote of a powerful enchantress named Circe in his Odyssey. And throughout the years, Circe has appeared as the subject of countless works of art, operas, and other writings. Earned a reputation as a symbol of feminine strength and power. And Baba Yaga is a Slavic character first mentioned in print in 1755. Although she's infamously known for devouring children, her story has been used to teach reverence for nature, respect for elders, and good manners. You know, perceptions of witches shifted starting in the 13th century with growing suspicion of magical practices leading to widespread persecution for the next 400 years. Most well-known witch hunts occurred throughout Europe and the U.S., though fear and discrimination against practitioners exist to this day. The popularity of witchcraft experienced a resurgence starting in the 1990s, fueled by increased interest in Wicca and neo-paganism. Practitioners embraced the term witch, and elements of the belief system spread into popular culture as symbols of feminism and female empowerment. You know, witchcraft has evolved from the stuff of legends, but shades of some of these ancient traditions, such as protection spells and talismans and healing arts, can still be found in current practices. Quintessential tools like Ouija boards and tarot cards and the Zodiac all find their place in the modern witch's toolkit. While the number of witch influencers and hashtag witch talk posts continues to grow, for most witches, witchcraft didn't hold a single definition. Mother encourages exploration of one's own identity as a witch. And a lot of it makes as much sense as men saying they identify as women and silliness like that. Well, most people, when you talk about witch trials, think about Salem. But that wasn't the only or the first of the witch trials. Let's talk about the European witch trials. What we refer to as the Burning Times lasted for almost 400 years. You know, as Christianity spread across Europe in 1484, Pope Innocent VIII issued a decree declaring witchcraft heresy, which launched centuries of persecution of alleged witches. And he accused heretics of using spells and incantations to destroy crops and livestock, even prevent consummation of marriages. It was a sin and punishable by death by burning. You know, quite frankly, in looking at some of the actions of some of the popes, you have to wonder just what they were thinking when they did all this. You know, in the first trials of the 14th and early 15th centuries, the number of victims are relatively low, and they were mostly men. According to Dr. Romany Regan, a scholar of dark history and research fellow at London's Museum of the Home, these were sorcerers of text-based magic, above the education level allowed to most women. Now, that changed in the second half of the 15th century when a very strict subset of Catholic friars called observance sought to purify Christianity. They offered a scapegoat for the unusually cold, bitter weather and political instability. The doings of devil-worshipping witches. Now, it's all well and good to point out a scapegoat, but that may be done only to cover your own shortfalls. According to Reagan, this is when the gender switch happened, from learned male witches to the narrative of sinful women giving in to the devil. And these women weren't scholars nobody met. These were your neighbors. The last 300 years of the witch trials were a sharpened knife held at the throat of all women, according to Dr. Roman E. Reagan. But especially widows and unmarried women. They had to rely on charity. And this is where the stereotype of a witch being an old woman comes from. If a neighbor's cow died, they'd remember that when the widow asked for help and they didn't offer it, and executing the widow would eliminate the financial drain on the community. 1486, the Melius Maleficarum was published, meaning the Hammer of the Witches. It was an instruction manual for identifying witches, offered strategies for uncovering witches causing a community's bad luck. Among the indignities and tortures inflicted on the alleged culprits, suspected witches were shaven and examined for marks identifying them as servants of the devil. Some inquisitors believed that the marks could be invisible and could be found by pricking the skin with pins. If it didn't cause the victim pain, and she was certainly a witch. Interrogation also included grueling imprisonment, sleep deprivation, and starvation. All in the name of God, don't you know? This witchcraft hysteria enthralled Europe for almost 400 years, claimed between 40 and 60,000 lives before it was halted by the Enlightenment. According to Reagan, society turned to philosophy and the beginnings of natural science and belief in magic dwindled. Now, that doesn't state that magic went away. It just, folks quit believing in it so thoroughly and actually fearing it. Now, turning from Europe, did you know that Connecticut held witch trials 45 years before the witch trials in Salem, Massachusetts? Connecticut, witchcraft was a capital crime punishable by death in all New England colonies and interpreted to mean having a relationship with Satan. Well, the fanatically religious Connecticut colonists faced hardship from harsh winters and floods and disease. All that, as well as frequent battles with the indigenous population, made them believe they were fighting the power of satanic witches. When in doubt, blame Satan. Some of the things that witches were blamed for were injuries to livestock and the ruining of crops. One of the accused, Catherine Harrison, fell under suspicion for reading fortunes, being able to spin yarns unusually fast. And she'd previously been a servant who became a wealthy landowner when her husband died, and a rise in social status made her certainly suspect. 1647, a young woman named Elise Young was hanged as a witch in Windsor, Connecticut, because her daughter remained healthy, while neighbor children were claimed by an epidemic. In fact, she was the first person to be executed for witchcraft in colonial America. Well, at least 34 people were accused and 10 other victims hung in the 50-year panic. Eight of those were women. One of them, a woman named Mary Johnson, was questioned and tortured until she finally confessed to uncleanness with men and having familiarity with the devil. Johnson's execution, which was the second in the Connecticut Panic, was delayed until she delivered a baby, after which she was hung. Others who escaped execution fled or were actually run out of town. Many of the women targeted and executed were single mothers living in poverty on the edges of the community. And others were punished for daring to express their sexuality or, frankly, any other kind of independence. 1657, John Winthrop Jr. became governor and chief magistrate of the state and commuted some of the death sentences, including that of Catherine Harrison. He started to require more witnesses and more stringent evidence for accusations. The last witchcraft trial in Connecticut took place in 1697, when the charges against a mother and a daughter were actually dismissed. In May of 2023, after 2 decades of lobbying, the Connecticut Witch Trial Exoneration Project announced that the state Senate had finally passed a resolution to clear the names of all those that were accused, including the 11 who were hung. This group continues to work toward the installation of a permanent memorial. Connecticut witch trials haven't captured the popular imagination the way the Salem witch trials did. Maybe because what happened in Salem was spotlighted by Arthur Miller's Pulitzer Prize-winning play, The Crucible. But the Connecticut events set the stage for the next wave of hysteria in Massachusetts. You know, there's also a few other very human issues that led to witchcraft accusations. If somebody prospered and someone didn't, the one that didn't prosper would always raise the issue of witchcraft. He wasn't a bad farmer. He was cursed by a neighbor. And of course, there's gullible people that buy into that. Witches escaped and one innocent person be condemned. And certainly that's a very open and honest approach to the issue. You know, 200 suspected witches were imprisoned and the first accused were marginalized residents in Massachusetts. Coroner Rachel Christ Dome, Director of Education at the Salem Witch Museum in Salem. Not one accused in Salem was a witch, and not a single person was burned at the stake. So you have to raise the question, what did happen? January 1692, 9-year-old Betty Parris and 11-year-old Abigail Williams fell ill. They're the daughter and niece of Reverend Samuel Parris, one of the fire and brimstone preachers for which that time period was known. Their contorted screaming made bizarre sounds. Complained of being struck with invisible pins. So these odd symptoms and attacks spread through the community, along with accusations of witchcraft. The accusations made in Salem were primarily of spectral torments. Witch was theoretically capable of projecting a ghostly version of themselves beyond their physical body. And that specter could then hurt people sometimes miles away. Well, the symptoms spread, so did resentment and suspicion, heightened by the stress and trauma the early community was experiencing. Tensions with local settlements, fights with indigenous peoples and French colonists, smallpox, harsh New England winters. Extremely religious, the settlers believed these misfortunes were caused by the devil, or the devil's minions through witchcraft. They blamed misfortunes on those they disliked or who had wronged them. For example, one comment said, I had a fight with you 10 years ago and my husband got sick. It's because you're a witch. First accused were marginalized residents, a poor beggar, a sick elderly woman, and Tituba, an enslaved South American woman. From that small beginning, up to 200 suspected witches were imprisoned for months awaiting trial as the settlement's government was in shambles. Well, the trials began in May of 1692 in a special court, with the magistrates uncharacteristically allowing the spectral evidence and the testimony of children. Over just a few months, the trials led 19 people to the gallows, and one elderly man was pressed to death with heavy stones. 5 other accused died in prison. Almost right away, the community realized the trials had been corrupt. Esteemed Minister Cotton Mather and his father, Increase Mather, the president of Harvard College, spoke out against using spectral evidence. Governor disbanded the court in October 1692.
By January 1693, a new court held trials requiring a higher standard of evidence, and accused witches were either reprieved or found not guilty. Well, over the next few years, there were apologies and atonement and some restitution. 1697, the government proclaimed a day of prayer and fasting over the errors and sins committed by the courts. Today, there are actually two public memorials in Salem. One at Proctor's Ledge, where the hangings took place, but it wasn't until 2022 that all the accused were finally exonerated. Salem, which came to be called Witch City, works to ensure we remember the horrors and unchecked ignorance and extremism can have on a community. Salem has had a really difficult time reconciling with its dark history. But the history starts conversations, and it's contributed to the way Salem is such an open and accepting community. Would that El Paso was as open and accepting. You know, a name that keeps popping up when discussing the Salem witch trials was Tituba. And I've never really heard who she actually was. You know, she was one of the first people accused in Salem. She was referred to as Tituba Indian, slaved in Reverend Parrish's home where the first two afflicted girls lived. Arthur Miller's The Crucible, she is portrayed as an African voodoo priestess who taught demonic black magic to the children under her care. In reality, she was actually an indigenous Arawak who had been kidnapped from what's now Guyana or Venezuela. The Indian added to her name and referenced 15 times in court documents reinforced this position. As the girls twitched and howled, a doctor was summoned. His diagnosis was that they were bewitched. Tituba was instructed by a white neighbor, Mary Sibley, to make a witch cake to reveal the culprit. Recipe included the urine from the bewitched person, and the cake was fed to a dog. Now, this was English folk magic and is the only recorded instance of witchcraft being performed in Salem. Well, when Reverend Parrish found out about it, he admonished Sibley in a sermon stating the devil hath been raised. But Sibley herself was never accused of witchcraft, but Tituba, who followed her orders, was. According to Rachel Christone of the Salem Witch Museum, the colonists referred to the devil as the black man. So they have this connection of indigenous people as demons and devils. During Tituba's trial, she admitted to practicing witchcraft and incriminated others in the community. Well, historians have come to believe she was acting out of self-preservation and telling the magistrates what they clearly wanted to hear, and that was ultimately what saved her life. Although Tituba confessed, she wasn't executed, but was kept alive as an informant. Eventually, her case was dismissed due to lack of evidence. Now, there was one claim that Tituba retracted her confession and said she'd been forced to confess by Reverend Parrish. And he refused to pay her jail fee, so she remained in prison until another enslaver settled her bill and forced her black into slavery. And Tituba falls out of history at that point. But in the popular coven season of American Horror Story, Queenie, played by Gaberni Sidibe, was a descendant of Tituba, also portrayed by Ashley Matawiki in the Salem TV series. And her spirit was called upon during an exorcism scene in the Netflix series The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. So even though there was absolutely no proof she was a witch, she has that label down through history. Now there's something referred to, and I heard this growing up, as the witching way, from nature-based religions to West African spiritual traditions and Mexican-born rituals. There's some very popular practices even today. Now, let's talk about Wicca. That's a type of witchcraft. It's a protected religion under the First Amendment. A lot of Wiccans write their spiritual practices and rituals in what they call a Book of Shadows. Now, it's a nature-based religion dating back to England in the 1950s that spread to the U.S. in the 1960s.
practitioners worship goddesses as well as gods and a great respect for the earth and the environment. Falls within faith called neo-pagan, meaning it follows beliefs different from the established world religions, particularly the veneration of nature. Wiccans don't believe in a devil or Satan as known to Christians. They plan rituals around moon phases, equinoxes, solstices, and seasons. These rituals might begin by honoring the elements of earth, air, fire, water, and often include a fifth element of spirit. And while there are a number of different branches of Wicca, most agree on an ethical code that allows the freedom to practice however you want as long as you're not hurting anybody. And additionally, many operate under the rule of three, stating that whatever energy you put out, positive or negative, will come back to you threefold. In general, Wiccans could be advocates for the environment, animal rights, feminism, and inclusive to LGBTQ, whatever other letters you want to add to it. You know, the wording of Wicca is slightly murky, but an English customs officer named Gerald Gardner claimed to have been initiated into a secretive covering of witches who practiced ancient pre-Christian beliefs in 1939. In 1951, he formed his own coven and created initiations and rituals into what he named Wicca. Barred heavily from other occultists and scholars of witchcraft. And in 1954, he published an influential book called Witchcraft Today, which created wide interest in Wicca. But historians aren't convinced that the pagan coven Gardner created to have joined, claimed to have joined, ever existed, and had disputed the idea of Wicca being based on a pre-Christian religion. But Gardner's influence can't be denied, though. Gardner's sometimes high priestess Doreen Valente wrote that Wicca and witchcraft in general as practiced in the modern world is by nature the result of a long period of evolution. Like anything over time, it's experienced a lot of change and growth. In fact, there are offshoots in newer Wicca traditions such as Alexandrian, Dionic, Fairy, Minoan, and possibly dozens more. A lot of practitioners today practice solo without a coven. Don't necessarily follow strict guidelines. Despite its controversies, Wicca has been acknowledged as a religion and protected by the First Amendment since 1986. It's also recognized by the U.S. military and the penal system. Whatever Gardner may have done or not done, he left us with these whimsically appealing thoughts on his Wicca traditions. He said, witchcraft was and is not a cult for everybody, unless you've got an attraction toward the occult, a sense of wonder, a feeling you can slip for a few minutes out of this world into another world of fairy that's it's no use to you. Well, you know, a lot of movies and books have talked about hoodoo. That's not new. And it's not a catch-all term for a variety of practices, which is how pop culture tends to portray it. It's also known as conjure or root work. But hoodoo is actually its own practice with its own rules and history. At its core, of course, hoodoo is an African-American tradition created by enslaved people in southern the U.S. from various spiritual practices they adapted to the land they found themselves in. Within hoodoo, ancestor veneration is particularly important, and practitioners work with a number of tools such as candles and roots and herbs, hence the name root work. Hoodoo doesn't have the barriers that many magical practices have, such as strict levels of initiation. There's just the work, and how you use it's up to you. Practice doesn't even refer to spells, but talks about work or chores. There's a lot of confusion about hoodoo and voodoo, which are very different. Voodoo is a religion that's commonly thought to have originated in Haiti and has roots in West African spiritual tradition. As a religion, voodoo has specific practices, some of which you have to be ordained to perform. It's got religious leaders known as mambos and huguns who oversee these practices. And there's a strict set of deities and spirits that are worshipped and respected. Now, in hoodoo, on the other hand, there's a belief in spirits and life-giving energies, but you can worship any gods you want to or not. No organized hierarchy. That isn't to say there's no rules.
There are, but they're not codified in a rigid structure often associated with religion. Hoodoo is based in the African diaspora and should be practiced only by those of African descent. Work was developed to protect and heal from the traumas of enslavement. And we see this in the roots used for traveling safely and works used for protecting the home against physical violence, winning a court case, or being overlooked by the law. America's always been dangerous for African Americans, and hoodoo is a method of protection. And to give you an idea of how dangerous it is, I lost a career for standing up and telling a judge that blacks and Hispanics had the same rights as anybody else. Called me a traitor to my race and said he'd end my career, and he did. Of course, nobody. Everybody takes the position, if he didn't do anything, why would he say it? And if he said it, it had to be true, because he was a judge. He wouldn't lie. He was a bigoted, self-righteous, well, I won't finish the statement. And a simple way to explore hoodoo is to make a honey jar. That's a jar filled with honey and curios and herbs meant to sweeten a situation or a person and work it. Sit down with a lit candle, write your intentions, and gather the bits and pieces to go into the jar. Now, you don't have to begin your practice with a jar or any focused intention. There are plenty of works that are general causes, such as safety or healing. Some say the best way to begin is to get in touch with your ancestors through an altar. And there's a lot of books out there on how to build an altar in your home. Well, let's talk about Brujeria. You know, modern Latina and Latino witches are honoring the past. You know, the term Brujeria means witchcraft in Spanish, but it has distinct traditions and practices. Today's elements from West Africa that were brought to the Caribbean and the Americas by enslaved people. And they're also combined with some elements and practices of indigenous Native Americans. Now, Brujeria has been passed down through generations, and current practitioners value and honor their ancestors and cultural roots. They visit botanicals or spiritual supply stores to purchase candles and herbs and incense and oils and other necessities used to create altars and ritual cleansing and for binding and protection spells. Binding spells used to stop somebody from doing something harmful to themselves or others. And a botanical provides a safe space that extends homeland traditions, especially for immigrants, according to Lorraine Montigot, a Cuban Colombian Bruja and author of Brujas, The Magic of Power of Witches of Color. Usually there's a spiritual practitioner available in the store to address candles and provide consultations for a wide range of physical, emotional, and spiritual problems. She supplements her rituals with the practice of writing in a journal, anointed with oil on the new and full moons. Sometimes she draws a tarot card as a visual prompt for her writing. The difference between Brujeria and Santeria is fairly well known. Although both are important spiritual practices originated as a result of the Caribbean slave trade, Brujeria and Santeria are very different traditions. Santeria is a syncretic Afro-Caribbean religion that started and is primarily practiced in Cuba, mainly based on the beliefs of the Yoruba people, interwoven with some aspects of Catholicism. One Bruja, Mexican-born Valeria Rios, inherited her traditions from her great-grandmother. But she didn't fully step up to her calling till she was in college. In her article, How Brujeria Helped Me Heal, in Cosmopolitan magazine, she wrote, I decided to learn more about Brujeria and Chicano history and became a source of healing. I finally knew why I had so many visions, why I could speak to spirits, and why I'd attracted so many good things into my life. First, you learned about the deities, the mythology associated with Brujeria. Started connecting with the spiritual world through cooking ancestral meals and praying to my ancestors or by saying affirmations in Spanish and meditating. She also has some guidelines for anybody interested in exploring Brujeria. Said healing is for everybody. Non-Latinas and Latinos choose to study these rituals. It's important they do it respectfully. But she went on to say, today, most Brujeria circles are inclusive of anybody who comes with respect and love. You know, it's there's a gentleman here in El Paso, former Navy officer. He is a psychic. And a lot of people claim that title. But he is so accurate, he is scary. And I've seen him scare people into leaving events where he has appeared. There used to be psychic fairs. I don't know if there still are. And people left his table, sometimes white as a sheet. But the feedback I got regarding him was 9 times out of 10, what he said was correct. Well, let's talk about some legendary icons and spellbinding celebrities. You know, there's 7, let's call them iconic real witches. Without these individuals, witchcraft wouldn't be what it is today. The first one is one I had an opportunity to visit her grave was Marie Laveau. Born in 1801, died in 1881. She was a free Creole woman in New Orleans and liked to practice a mixture of Roman Catholicism, voodoo, and herbalism, what we might call hoodoo today. She used healing, herbal magic on yellow fever victims and decorated altars for and prayed with condemned prisoners. Held weekly spiritual ceremonies in what's now Louis Armstrong Park, while white onlookers sensationalized and interpreted it as devil worship. Her name is still invoked on touristy souvenirs from the Crescent City and her supposed tomb as a stop on spooky cemetery tours. She's portrayed by Angela Bassett on American Horror Story, The Coven. If you've ever been to her grave, which is in Cemetery Number 1, all on the ground, all around her tomb, are everything you can imagine. There's even money. And I went on a tour, but there was a tour guide there, and I said, you know, where I live, this would all been gone 30 minutes after it's put down. She said, well, nobody steals from Marie Laveau. Those who have regretted it. Another one whose name resounds in the witchcraft area is Aleister Crowley, who died in 1947. He was also known as the Great Beast. He was a controversial author, poet, and ceremonial magician, known as a sex and drugs loving libertine. Using messages received through meditation, Crowley started a sex magic religion called Thelema, and espoused the credo, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Now, he was inspired by Eastern esotericism and was an early Western proponent of yoga. Practices and writings had an incalculable influence on witchcraft traditions to come. And his definition of magic is frequently quoted. It's the science and art of causing change to occur in conformity with will. And then, of course, one I'd mentioned earlier in the show, Gerald Gardner, the initial proponent of Wicca. You know, the Wiccan religion can be traced back to Gardner, who publicized his own coven and ritual practices starting in 1951. He's known as the father of modern witchcraft, devoted his life to Wicca, which was substantially based on Crowley's work and concepts of pre-Christian goddess worship. Now, though Gardner was known to somewhat stretch the truth, his legacy is more than 1 million Wiccans practicing in the U.S. alone. And he's got an interesting book out called Witchcraft Today. Then there's Doreen Valente. Saw Gardner's Wicca coven in a magazine in 1952 and wrote to him open to join. She was initiated in 1953 at Stonehenge, eventually becoming his coven high priestess. But she became critical of how much of his writings and rituals he had copied from Crowley, concerns over the authenticity of his claims, and his desire to always be in the limelight. But eventually broke ties with him She's known as the mother of modern witchcraft, as the author of the influential Rebirth of Witchcraft, among several other books. She was a public face of witchcraft during the rise of the feminist movement, which made witchcraft welcoming and appealing to younger women. Well, there's a number of what we might call spellbinding celebrities. While some witches practice privately, of course, others are in the limelight. Let's talk about Lana Del Rey, singer-songwriter. Not only has a witchy vibe, but also admitted to casting spells. And after tweeting a series of dates of the waning crescent moon, it seemed like she was referring to a spell. Later confirmed she was participating in a mass binding ritual against then-President Trump in an effort to stop him from doing harm. You know, part of the problem is, you know, a president is not all-powerful, and he must do what he does many times by steps. And when lunatics like this run around going, we're going to bind him, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, he has about as much influence as the witches in World War II that were going to bind Hitler, stop him from doing more damage. Didn't work then, didn't work now. Let's talk about Azealia Banks, a rapper. Raised eyebrows after posting a graphic video online related to a ritual she performed. Wore goggles and explained she was using a sandblaster to clean what looked like a closet created in coated in feathers in the aftermath of 3 years of rituals. Said she practiced Bruharia, adding witches do real things. Also claimed that her mother practiced magic and she shared a protection spell using an egg. And then, of course, there's Spencer Pratt, reality TV star. Not only consulted a wizard, but also sells high-end crystals online. Told Entertainment Weekly he spent thousands of dollars on a wizard coach who had had him carrying around a magic wand. Online shop Pratt Daddy sells crystal healing stones and crystal jewelry. If you didn't wonder about him before, you got to wonder about him now. How about Rachel True? Not only she's an actress, favorite pop culture witch for her role as Rochelle in 1996's The Craft, she's a real-life practicing witch as well. Told Cosmopolitan she used crystal magic to clinch her part in the film. She's the creator of a hybrid memoir and tarot book deck called True Heart Intuitive Tarot, based on her lifetime of experience. Works as a professional tarot reader, offering readings online through her Patreon. And then there's Giselle Bündchen. Calls herself a love witch and uses healing Reiki on her children. Also claimed to have built lucky altars for her husband Tom Brady before football games and given him healing stones. She once said, if you want to call me a witch because I love astrology, I love crystals. I pray, I believe in the power of nature, then go right ahead. Wonder why it didn't stop her divorce. Well, let's talk about Bully Erna, the singer and frontman for the rock band Godsmack, is not only public about his Wicca practice, but incorporated into a music video. Confusingly, the song is called Voodoo, and video appears to include references to both Voodoo and Wicca. But he claims to be the real deal and even attended official Witch of Salem Laurie Cabot's 75th birthday party in the Witch City. And then there's Heather Graham, Austin Powers star, once told the press she identified as a witch. And we all know whatever you identify with is fact. Look at Dylan Mulvaney. She had a small coven of friends who worked with her to cast spells to help Barack Obama be elected president. She said, we never jinx somebody with evil spells. Of course, she jinxed the country, but that's neither here nor there. How about Cybill Shepherd? She won the Best Actress Golden Globe Award in 1996 and presented a lengthy list of people to thank, as most winners do. And in the end, she said, in particular, thanks to the great goddess and all her guises, may she bring us peace, joy, and righteous anger, and blessed be. And then Vanessa Hudgens, actress and singer, had a witch awakening while filming the Princess Switch on the location. Scotland's history of witch trials had a profound effect on her. She explained to Cosmopolitan that her practice is a big part of who she is and said, I very much am a nature witch and a green witch. I feel the most connected and grounded with nature, and I feel the most connected with spirit and nature. Well, let's talk about let's call them enchanted movies and TV shows. Up, I just noticed we're almost out of time. I'll just do a couple, and we'll pick it up where I'm leaving off tomorrow. You know, whether you love to see a witch work her dark magic, or you're here for the witches trying to do good for the world, there are a lot of great options. 1998, we have Practical Magic. Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock star as two sister witches raised by their aunts, who are also witches. But their family has a curse. The men they fall in love with are doomed to an untimely death. Well, that's no fun. Then in 2015, we had The Witch. A young woman witnesses the disappearance of her youngest brother in 1630 New England and is subsequently accused of witchcraft. Anna Taylor-Joy plays Thomason with such conviction you actually believe she's trapped in a 17th century waking nightmare. Certainly there can be issues. Then in 1977 we had Suspiria, and in 2018 we had Suspiria. It's rare to enjoy a remake as much as the original, but in this case both Dario Argento and Luca Guadagnino's versions are sumptuous feasts for the eyes. Supernatural horror story revolves on an American ballerina who transfers to a prestige dance academy in Germany and realizes her new school has a dark history of occultism. And 2016, we have The Love Witch. A retro horror movie tells the story of a beautiful witch who uses potions and spells to attract male suitors, only to end up with needy victims who can't get enough of her. When she finally meets the man of her dreams, she gets caught up in love. It almost leads to a deadly murder. And certainly that can be a issue. Well, on that note, we have come to the end of today's show. We'll be back tomorrow and talk about more magical movies for witchy inspirations. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.